On this episode of Football 301, Matt Harmon joins me to talk about things we think we know and things we know we know. Few topics from the 2025 NFL season, things that we think we have an inkling on for this season that's just completely wide open. Plus, start the show with a Monday Night Football Cowboys Raiders recap. Very fun show with Matt. See you guys in a sec. Hello, welcome back to Football 301. I am your host, Nate Tice. Fun Tuesday show for you today. Well, we're going to start with a Monday Night Football recap, which wasn't so fun. I mean, but we're going to talk about it. But today, we're going to talk about what we know, and what we think we know so far with the 2025 NFL season. That has been anything but predictable. I think the only prediction you could have had before the season that it would be unpredictable, and I think that was correct. And one of those guys that also said that with me, that this season would be unpredictable, to help me talk about what we know, and what we think we know, my guy, Mr. Matt Harmon. How you doing today, Matt? Good to see you.
Good to see you, as always. Yeah, it's funny because I think this topic is a good test of yourself at this point of the season because, you know, you have a lot of takes here 11 weeks into the season, but some of them are not so strongly held. Some of them are loosely held, and there's a large collection of those. So actually narrowing it down to what I know that I know was a little bit more difficult than the things like, I think I know this. I think I know a lot of stuff, which maybe made it a little bit more difficult to narrow that part of the list down. But I'm excited to break all this down. It's a wide range of topics we got here today.
Yeah, it's fun. I like this. You know, Stone threw it at us like, hey, how about we just talk about this tomorrow, Producer Stone? And I was just like, yeah, that's perfect. I think I just gave it a thumbs up. I was like, that's great because we can just kind of talk about a wide range of things. This actually gets me back to now that I've done a little TV, this little inside baseball, but I had somebody talk to me, you know, they have like a talent coach kind of coach you up on some things, mm-hmm. You know, as you know, you've worked in production. And I had someone say like, well, when you give a point and you give a statistic, say that people want to hear what you know and not what you think. They want to hear that you're definitive on it, Mike. But I don't know anything. These are just things I think.
It's football.
So there's an entire – yeah, it's football. I mean, there's 22 guys out there in an oblong ball shaped of leather. How am I going to predict any of this? So that just when we were doing this topic, I just – Jerry's voice was coming to mind as I thought about all of this. But before we get into what we know, think we know – you do. I figured you did. That's why. Everyone that's met Jerry knows Jerry. He's been, yes. But we'll get in before into that fun subject. We'll get into this Monday Night Football that happened here in my place of residence in Las Vegas. Cowboys beat the Raiders 33-16. My memories of these two teams playing was in 2017. When old ref Gene put the index card in between the first down marker and Jason Witten gave him a little slap on the butt. And that is burned into my brain. But that was also a night game, even though both of our teams were not very good that year in 2017. But Cowboys Raiders on the schedule, guaranteed night game. Circled, starred, highlighted because of these fan bases. And it was popping here in Vegas. I can even tell you, even if I'm out in the suburbs, This was a pop-in game, which is even more than we would think Monday night. But Cowboys controlled this one, benched George Pickens and CeeDee Lamb for the first series that lasted three plays because they had a night out in Vegas. I'm curious if they had two nights out in Vegas. That's a pretty easy one to connect there. But man, what were your thoughts on this game, Matt? Because it was just out of hand. It felt like it was out of hand pretty early.
Well, they had a night in this game, that's for sure. I don't know about their nights before this one, but those two guys obviously were a force, especially George Pickens, 144 yards and a touchdown. And I thought last night was a really good representation of just what I think Pickens is as a player, which is a guy that has added new layers to his game every single year.
Yeah.
You know, I think his first season, he was a guy who, I mean, I remember you and I actually talking about him, I think like just texting, DMing, something like that after his first season, you kind of showing some of your stats, me showing some of my charting work and kind of saying, hey, he does struggle in some of these certain areas to separate. I actually remember you saying, and I echoed this as well, that he's not that dissimilar from Alec Pierce, which at that point was like a compliment for us, but like a diss for the rest of the world. And now is kind of like a compliment again, which is just funny. The journey that these players go on, even in their first four seasons in the NFL. Not like they've been around for a long time here, but, you know, Pickens was a little bit of that straight line X receiver, didn't struggle to, or kind of struggled to separate over the full route tree, especially on some of the over the middle stuff. But I think he's added layers to his game every single step of the way. Last season, to me, he took a big step in terms of beating man coverage on slants and some of the quicker routes. He just didn't always get targeted in that area. Now you're seeing with Dallas, they're targeting him in the intermediate, in breakers, yards after catch situations. Obviously, the Raiders are not a good defense. That's a big part of what happened last night. But yeah, I just thought that was a good example of how Pickens has changed and evolved as a player from a guy that, coming out of his rookie season, like I said, struggled to separate as a full route tree type of option on the perimeter. But the more that has been put on his plate every single season, the more he's responded to it. Now I think he's was straight up one of the best receivers in the league and somebody that Dallas cannot afford to let go. I know that all eyes are on their defense, and obviously they've made some additions, which seemed like they paid immediate dividends last night against the hapless Raiders. Yes. And that's the talking point that we can have here. But I think Pickens is a guy that's getting the franchise tag at the end of the year and is not, if they don't come to a contract extension, and is not going anywhere. And if you look at Dallas's salary cap space, they have some veteran cuts. They have some contract restructuring that they can do. So I expect Pickens to remain with this team. He's just like too important to what they do offensively.
It's perfect addition. That's why when they even did it originally, I was like, no, this makes a lot more sense for them than it was maybe for a lot of other teams. Like if he was just going in and being the true number one, or going with a quarterback that operates in a different way, maybe not as like a perfect fit, still a good player. But here it's just like, no, he's the X that can do X things. But then also Dak loves like his route tree that he is good at. But like you said, they've kind of, he's just done more. Like, I don't know. He's just a more consistent player. Like, he's just a little more sound with everything. It happens when you actually get a quarterback probably he believes in. Got another alpha in the receiver room. So, you know, you can't maybe get away with some BS stuff. And I've just been really impressed with just how disciplined Pickens has played as he gets suspended for the first drive of the game. I really mean
and
this,
got
though.
An unsportsmanlike conduct the penalty of or the celebration. He got, of course, like, you
know. The celebration. I know. And that's, I can't believe I even say those words, but I watch him on the field and I don't have as many frustrations with him as I've had in the past. And obviously you see the stats with that, but I think that's just good process is leading to good results. And this is kind of, I originally had this as a bonus take for like what I think we know as one of those, but I've just moved it up because we're talking about Sunday Night Football or Monday Night Football. I keep saying Sunday Night, Monday Night Football. I think the Cowboys have set themselves up for contending in 2026, especially with, you know, the NFC is tough this year, but who knows next year? Because yeah, I think they'll figure out Pickens in some way, shape or form. Like you said, franchise tag, a deal, a contract of some sort. They still need plenty. Like they still need a running back next year. Maybe they just re-sign Javonte Williams on something, but they still need one more edge. They have, you know, Azaraku has really come along this year, their second round pick. And James Houston has been a nice player for them. He was always good with the Lions, but there's something off with him where they were just like always trying to find ways not to play him. And then they got rid of him. It was always very curious. But Quinnen Williams, you mentioned him, immediate dividends. I had a two-part take on Quinnen Williams when the trade happened. I was doing the show with Robert, and I was like, oh, yeah, oh, Jerry. We had cracked some jokes at Jerry. Like, oh, man, this feels like a little extra steps to get to it. And then I kind of was like, saw more kind of national takes on everything. And then I kind of wanted to, like, retcon my original take and go, like, Quinnen Williams is really good, guys. Like, Quinnen Williams is, like, a top 10, top 12-ish defender, but definitive top 12 defender. Just any position, and you're getting him in the prime of his career on a good contract. And so it was one of those where I kind of went back and actually what they got him for, I would rather get Quinnen Williams for that than maybe the Sauce Gardner trade, which I still like for the Colts, especially considering the AFC, but I'd rather pay this what the Cowboys did for Quinnen Williams than what the Colts did for Sauce. I'm a bigger believer in defensive line over, you know, corners first, even if they're both great players. He's a great fit next to Osa Odigizuwa. He defends the run. He can play all three downs, all four downs. They still need a linebacker. They still need cornerback health. But, man, I think they're set up really well because you look at that offense, especially with Pickens coming back. Dak is rolling in this offense. Clayton Adams was such a great add, you know, with this offensive scheme. The run game is one of the most dynamic run games in the NFL. The offensive line is good, and it's young. So, I mean, again, not the Disco Stew meme it, but I think there's going to be another step that they can take next year, especially if they're healthy the whole year. CD, Jake Ferguson, and Pickens might be one of the best top three pass catcher duos, with all have synergy with their quarterback and all have synergy with each other. Yeah, they only have a 10% chance to make the playoffs this year. So, like, I wish I could be a little bit more like, oh, they might make a run this year. I just think the NFC is such a bloodbath, and their schedule is tough. They got Eagles, Chiefs, Lions, even the Vikings, you know, with McCarthy. They still have Brian Flores you have to deal with in that run game. Chargers and then Commanders, Giants, it tapers off. But, man, I think they're really set up a lot better for next year than maybe even some of these moves that have happened this year maybe I would have thought of a couple months ago.
Yeah, I like that. I think I can't remember if it was on the fantasy show where you and I talked about this or if it was offline, but I think we quickly before the show, it all blurs together at some point, but I think we both kind of said it. Yeah, it really does. I think we both said it felt in the reaction to the Quinnen Williams trade that was just like, wow, I guess everybody that we know in the football space doesn't like Quinnen Williams as much. Like, are we just higher on Quinnen Williams than other people? Because I thought that trade got really panned, and I didn't really get it. You know, I think he's a great player, and they got him for a pretty good price. So I like that. I can't get out of this game without taking one shot at the Raiders, because, you know, I can't stand this team.
Oh, please do. Oh, I have two bullet points on them, so please do.
Okay, good. Well, the first thing I wanted to note is because it felt like this watching the game live where, you know, the whole football internet right now is talking about 13 personnel and heavier tight ends and all this stuff. And the Raiders have obviously really good tight ends. Brock Bowers, Michael Mayer, Ian Thomas, who's actually a nice kind of role player, played for the Panthers for a while. He's a role player, more of a blocker, despite coming in with some nice athletic measurables. He's become more of a blocking specialist tight end. So they have three good personnels, 13 personnel, three tight ends. You know, they got three good tight ends here. They, since Brock Bowers got back, average minus 0.41 EPA per play out of 13 personnel, which among teams that have run 4+ plays per game out of 13 personnel ranks dead freaking last at minus 0.41. Yeah. It's actually a healthy gap between them and the second last place team, which is the Arizona Cardinals, of course, at minus 0.26. So it's so funny. Like, again, we're talking about, wow, 13. I know, 13 personnel. Incredible. Well, the Raiders have three good tight ends, and they stink out of 13 personnel. And I think part of that is because they just don't really know what to do with Brock Bowers. I think, to me, he just should be a slot receiver, you know, which is kind of tough because they drafted Jack Besh and they don't play Jack Besh, which drives me crazy. But he is supposed to kind of be a big slot receiver. And then you've got your sacrificial X receiver in Dante Thornton, played a bunch last night, zero targets. Of course, the ultimate the X has never been more sacrificed than Dante Thornton was last night. So it's just this weird offensive kind of build here. But to me, it's like when you watch the Rams use 13 personnel and they're clearing space with Terrence Ferguson and they're setting up mismatches, they end up using Bowers sometimes as the isolated receiver. And look, I love Brock Bowers, but every bad coach ends up doing this with these ultra talented tight ends. Or, you know, think about Kyle Pitts in the early part of his Atlanta Falcons career. It's, oh, well, let's use him as the X receiver. Well, guess what? Then you took a great tight end and an awesome slot receiver, and then you made him maybe the 25th best X receiver in the league. It just, to me, you're diminishing returns there. You're not actually getting the mismatches that good teams like the Rams or the Seahawks end up doing here.
I'm glad you brought that up, because even writing them up going into the draft and just considering him like a rare blue chip player was, you know, because he was getting compared to Kyle Pitts and everyone's like, well, Kyle Pitts got drafted high and you do this. But it's like, well, they're different. They're both tight ends, but they're used differently. Like, Pitts is a big, long guy that can maybe line up outside. I still think he's best towards the formation, but he can line up outside. Bowers is a tight end that's a slot. He is an adjuster. Like, he is a guy that is slot. He's the second tight end. He's in the backfield. You move him around, but yeah, you can line up outside, but you want him breaking on routes. And as you know, like, this has kind of always been my comparison for, like, outside routes are like a plane. You know, you go straight, come back down, while inside routes are more like a helicopter. Can go any which way. You can go up, you can go down, you can break, you can go left, you can right. You know, it's up down every way. And talk to pilots and talk about controlling a helicopter compared to a plane. It's kind of the same thing. So that's what you want Bowers doing. You want him moving and breaking and doing all this stuff, because that's where he creates mismatches, because he's such a rare mover, especially in his body, or how big he is. So I'm with you that it's no. I have another. I'm going to get off. Get on football nerds on a later talking point. So I'm kind of glad you talked about the personnel usage, because I think people are going a little nuts with this stuff right now. It's what works for you. It's what works for your personnel groupings. No, but I think too is, even before the year, I kind of was just always like thinking with the Raiders, it's like, oh, they could have an interesting offense. Just don't think it's a totally complete team and everything. Chip Kelly's getting paid a ton of money. I mean, the most money. I know more people are rekindling how much he's making, $6 million, in case you're curious. Watching is that this makeup of the coaches is Pete Carroll hired his son as offensive line coach. Mm-hmm. And as a coach's son, you know, I'm always just going to be like, I can be defensive of maybe some coaches' kids, like Brian Schottenheimer's doing a great job right now. But then also, but you see, yep, Kubiak. I mean, shoot, Kubiak, Kyle Shanahan. I mean, there's Kyle a whole Shanahan. Bunch of Beza, medical kid too. Yeah, right, there's a lot of good ones. Trust me. but Pete Carroll has his son as offensive line coach, and I don't want to just be like, oh, that's all his issues. But when I watch this Raiders team, and everyone knows that the Raiders offensive line is not good. Anyone that has Ashton Jeanty shares, anyone that's watched the Raiders at all, and you look at stats, you look at eye tests. And I know their talent level isn't great. It's below average overall, but they are just making so many mistakes. And whether that's the communication between Carroll and younger Carroll, I think it's Brennan, and also with Chip Kelly, is it just something where their philosophies aren't lining up? But I just watch their offensive line. I just see a lot of mental mistakes and a lot of stuff where a guy's going in the wrong direction, a guy's misstepping. It's just happening so much. So there's a lot of their plays are dead on arrival. Because they have guys making mistakes. Like if a guy loses a one-on-one, it is what it is. But it reminds me of the Texans offensive line last year. Something we talked about a million times where it was just like, yeah, they don't have great talent, but they're also going in the wrong direction. And they're not even, their eyes aren't going into the right spot. And it's just something that just sticks out like a sore thumb, because it's like, I know this team is so incomplete and they need a lot of talent injections. It shouldn't be this bad. Like, that's what I just watched them. I'm like, they should not be this bad. They're just so sloppy. So it's more of rather than just a one game takeaways, I have more like long view takeaways for both of these teams right now. Good for the Cowboys and the Raiders. It's like, wow, you guys got to do a lot of soul searching just as a whole franchise, I think, after this year.
Yeah, it's going to be tough. A lot of uncomfortable conversations coming in there, especially because it sounds like they like the front office. And it does not seem like the coaching staff.
Oh, you think when they came out today, like, hey, the front office, still good.
Yep. Who has more Brady ties there between the GM and the coaching staff? I wonder.
Yeah. Pete's on a 3-year deal. Yeah, I know. It's one of these things. I didn't have high expectations. They just disappointed them every step away. I just wanted some games where they had some cool offensive performances. And it's like, oh, yeah. There's some jokes about Trey Tucker, I guess. Like, that's all I've got out of this Raiders team. But I am feeling way more bullish on the Cowboys than maybe a couple months ago. And just a lot of their team makeup is making a little more sense to me. I don't know if Jerry did it on purpose. I think he backdoored his way into a lot of this. But it actually is working out. They have a lot of star power that is making big plays. And I'm just very excited about where they can go. All right. We're going to take our first break. But first, check us out on the Yahoo Sports Network, available to stream on leading fast services or on yahoosports.tv. Plenty of good stuff there all day, every day. We're going to take a break and we'll come back with what we know, I think. All right, see you guys in a sec. All right, we are back. And now it's time for what we know. This is what we are sure of at this point of the season. Bet our house on it, or at least, you know, maybe a couple bucks. How about that? But Matt, let's start with yours. I like this one. What do you got?
Well, the Falcons' mismanagement has given one of the best teams in the NFL a gift. So this is a little bit of a two-parter here. Obviously, the Atlanta Falcons season is going in the wrong direction. They're already 3-7, so they're already right now. I believe if the draft happened today, they would pick 8th overall.
Yes, they
would. I think that's the floor. can only go down from, I guess, you know, that doesn't make sense, but it can only go up in the draft order from here. You know what I'm saying? because I think this is going to get a lot worse before it gets a lot better. Michael Penix obviously out for the rest of the season. It seems like Drake London has a PCL injury. To me, it sounds a little bit similar based on some of the stuff I've looked at to Brock Bowers or Ricky Pearsall's injury from the PCL sprain standpoint. Not fun recoveries so far this season in the Brock Bowers, Ricky Pearsall saga. Guys that, you know, Bowers tried to play through. He came back and tried to play through it. Wasn't himself until they finally put him on the shelf, and they didn't get really back into form until week 9, which is why I shared those splits earlier about since week 9 when Brock Bowers got back out of 13 personnel for the Raiders. And for Pearsall, he just got back after a long absence, and he wasn't really involved in the game plan other than clearing out space for the 49ers last week. He'll be more involved going forward, but that's sort of the level of recovery we're potentially looking at here. So by the time Drake London is not just back, but even back to his full form, I mean, the season's going to be completely over for Atlanta. And you know how I feel about Drake London. We feel a lot of the same ways, that their offense just doesn't work unless Drake London is getting the ball, you know, 10, 11, 12 plus times a game. Well, he's not going to be involved here. So you're now looking at the Kirk Cousins, Darnell Mooney show. We've already seen what that looks like this year. It looks pretty freaking bad. So, and unfortunately, Atlanta, again, sent their first round pick in next year's draft to the Los Angeles Rams to, because they had to have James Pierce. Well, we didn't expect Jalen Walker to be here at our pick. We got to take him, but we were so dead set on taking James Pierce, we got to trade next year's first in order to get into it. And again, based on some of the other compensation, they didn't just give up that pick either. There was other compensation that went back too. So this just looks like a really bad bungle. And unfortunately, we were completely right at the time with what we said about this. I reference this often, Nate, this conversation that you, Charles, and I had off, because this was one I know we had off camera. We were walking back from the studio at the now former Playa Vista Yahoo studio for the draft show back to our hotel. And I remember saying at the time, the Falcons want to portray themselves, convey themselves as this LA Rams type of very thoughtful, and you know, we really think about the sport. It's that type of organization. But then they behave in ways that are like the New Orleans Saints, which is where Terry Fontenot, the GM, comes from. They're very impulsive, stuck on one thing. We've got to have this. We've got to do this. We've got to give up future assets to become this and live in the moment. We're never going to die. We'll always live forever. And that's sort of how they behave as a team. And unfortunately, I think those two wires have gotten so crossed here that now, again, this is a team that's completely lost in the wilderness. I think we've seen some nice things from Michael Penix, but I don't know that we like feel any more certain about what he is right now than we did in week one in terms of where he falls in the quarterback pantheon. And now that first round pick is going to the Rams, who might win the freaking Super Bowl this year and then have a position to maybe make a franchise changing pick with that selection. Because like I said, it's eighth overall right now. Who knows what it's going to be a few months from now?
And if you watch how Cousins was playing when he had to come in for Penix, his arm is completely gone. Completely gone. It's completely fallen off a cliff. I talked about this with Chuck. It might have been Shield. It's somebody recently, just like you said, all blends together. On a recent show, I talked about this, where guys were, I think people remember guys like Drew Brees or Peyton Manning when their arms fell off. And the thing was, they started with great arms. Watch young Peyton Manning or watch young Drew Brees. They're rocketing that thing. And then when they get to 40 years old, of course, the arm drops off. Tom Brady's an outlier in all every way, shape, and form. But then you watch guys like Kirk Cousins, who never really had a great arm. Like he had maybe an above average arm. And then so when his falls off, yeah, this is what it looks like. It's just like a bad athlete and they fall off. It's the Vince Carter discussions. He became a good role player because he was such a good athlete in basketball, and that's why he becomes an above average athlete as he gets older. Anyways, I think too, what I think with this whole Falcons thing is just there's a lot of hubris with all this. It was the word I always kind of came back to. Mm-hmm. Even when I was at the Athletic and they made this draft, when we were doing our draft show, when I was doing with Robert and Dane, I remember when that trade happened, I was just like, you know, just trying to piece it all together and go like, okay, one, you're reaching on Penix, because I think not only just me who had him as a day two guy, I think the consensus was that he was a day two guy, you know, maybe at best, maybe 28th overall on the big board, something of that sort. I had him in the, I think, 60. And when you're looking at that, it was just that they said that because they go, well, you got to address the quarterback position, which is like, okay, because we're not going to be picking this high ever again. And I was like, whoa, yep. You guys have not made the playoffs in a while. And you're going to say that? That was one of those where I was like, whoop, okay, you guys are not looking at reality. And then the stories came out and Terry brought up all these stories about how, and that's the thing. It's not just Penix's issues. Penix has actually been fine. but just talking about this, just the process of the Falcons is that, you know, Terry goes out and says, when I was with the Saints, we ID'd Patrick Mahomes. And we missed out on Patrick Mahomes, and I'm not going to let that happen again. And it was like, all right, one, Sean Payton ID'd Patrick Mahomes. Two, it's come out that you guys weren't even going to take Patrick Mahomes anyways. You guys were always going to take Lattimore with that selection. So, okay, we're already making more false narratives, however you want to put it.
Not living in reality,
we're going
to be generous.
Yeah, not living in reality at all. And then it was, we're going to live in, we're going on the Jordan Love Packers plan. Because we're going to sit our guy. And then they played Penix, with a month ago in his rookie season. And also Jordan Love was a project taken out of Utah State with not a young player, one of the youngest players quarterbacks drafted in recent memory from Utah State, while Penix was an old player who had injury histories. So also you're like, you're making the older guy sit for a while. Even Rodgers was super young when he was drafted. So that's the thing too. Okay, that didn't make sense to me. And then this summer, they just told everyone that would listen that went down to training camp, because multiple people say this, he's actually Stafford. That's who Michael Penix is. He's Matthew Stafford. And I was just like, what are you guys doing? Just shut the up. That's what I wanted to say to him. It's just like, just be normal and shut up. You guys are doing this to yourselves. You're making this like bed of all these proclamations. And so that's why it's just been watching it. I'm like, yeah, this is exactly the process you guys go in. They trade the pick with an unproven quarterback with a defense that still had holes in it that we're seeing now. They're doing good stuff scheme-wise on defense. They do good stuff scheme-wise on offense. Yeah. It's not perfect. But on defense, they do some cool blitz stuff, cool stuff. But it's just like – but the makeup of the team was just anyone with eyeballs goes, well, you need interior help. You need more – another corner. You need linebackers. Like, you guys aren't going to be able to stop the run. And they're just like, nope, we need two pass rushers. I don't know. It's just everything they said. It was just they're selling themselves on these prizes as opposed to like working their way up to those prizes. So it's just been very, very, very frustrating to watch, because it's just like, just all these self-inflicted stuff. And they just won't stop talking.
Yes.
And then the receiver stuff that's gone on this year, firing the coach, the receiver coach, and then not reporting Darnell Mooney's stuff, with the injury. Like, they said, oh, it's just a shoulder thing. He had a broken freaking collarbone. It's just been, they're a mess.
And then throwing him under the bus once we get into the season too. He's played poorly this year. I'd be the first one to tell you that, which is why I'm like, more Drake London is the answer to your offense. But then, he has a bad game. Like, they just like outright throw him completely under the bus, where you get other coaches like, I think Jim Harbaugh this week, when they asked him about Bradley Bozeman or somebody like that, they're like, well, I don't really get into evaluating players for the media, which is, we all know what you want to say, Jim, he stinks, but you don't say that because it's not the right thing to do.
Right. Yeah. You learn how to speak code. Like, that's what you have to do when you talk to the media. And it's like, and Raheem's a great hang, and just, don't get me wrong, I've worked with him years ago, and it's just one of these things too. It's like, well, you got to just stop talking and just stop saying these things. Like, it just help yourselves out a little bit. Like, it's just, I don't know. And even watching it too, it's like, you watch the team, they're sloppy. Like, we went on it into it on your show on the Fantasy Forecast when we were talking about, we're talking about kind of maybe the frustrations that this offense had. That we have with the offense. Oh, we need more play action. We need more of this. And then when you watch them, they do it, but then also there's some thoughtfulness, lack of thoughtfulness of what that actually means big picture wise and how stuff blends together. So it's just like they throw ideas at the wall, and then they're kind of like, they get crazy when it doesn't work, and they act like it's crazy that it didn't work. And it's just like, that's because you guys aren't thinking anything through and not seeing anything through. I don't know. It's just been frustrating, because then I watch them and I'm watching Bijan Robinson just being incredible and Drake London being incredible. And then and the run game scheme actually being pretty cool at times. And God, it's just so frustrating to watch. And it's a bed that they made. And that's really why we pile on so much about it. Yeah, that was therapeutic.
It really was. I mean, just shut the fuck up was probably the best best advice you could give the Falcons as a team for a minute.
To
like, let's look in the Well, we could all use a little bit of it, but like, let's look in the mirror and be a little bit more serious. If this staff is even back next year, yes. Obviously, we can have that conversation another time. But that's, right. I don't know. That's just a tough spot for this team to be in.
And then, yeah, now the Rams have potentially a number 8 pick, and you look at this draft class. There's couple of interesting quarterbacks. There's no like true blue chip guy, I would say. Fernando Mendoza is my QB1 right now. I consider him a good QB prospect, maybe like Stroud tier. And I know Stroud gets retconned, you know, after his rookie season, but like really how he was as a prospect. And I was, you know, Lenora Sellers is another interesting guy to me. I actually think his tape is from South Carolina has been really cool tape, really much better tape than people are giving him credit for. But he might go back. He's young. He might he should transfer because South Carolina's offensive line, offensive scheme are just so horrid. But he's another interesting name. Ty Simpson from Alabama, another interesting name. Dante Moore from Oregon, interesting name. So you got quarterbacks of the future. There's defenders that they can go after that are really cool. Avril Reese from Ohio State, Keldrick Falk. They don't really need an edge guy, but they got some. There's some cool corners that they go after. What I'm saying is the Rams are in a good spot for what they need, yeah. And they might be. And I actually think they're the best team in the NFL right now. I don't think that's a crazy statement. Especially, I'm going to segue to my next point. Because they beat the Seahawks. But my first point, what I know, the Seahawks are still a contender. I know they just lost to the Rams. Why are we all acting like the Seahawks are just bad now? Maybe I'm just like over, you know, indexing what I've seen and what I'm reading. Maybe I saw a couple power rankings that had them at like 8th and 9th and 10th and 7th. And I'm like, no, this is a team that's a top 5 team. Like just that's what they are. They are a very good team and to me a contender. And that's even without a run game. That's great. And I know Gray Zabel just got hurt as well. Not great as well. But this offense is still good. They still had a better success rate than the Rams did in this loss. It's just that Sam Darnold threw 4 picks. And even outside of that, it's a game on review. He actually had good moments and good processing during that game. He just had 4 freaking picks. But this is a legit team. Their defense is excellent. They're so good on that defensive front. They held Matthew Stafford to his lowest EPA per dropback in a game since he joined the Rams. Negative 0.34 EPA per dropback, 42% success rate. When you got the Rams off their opening script, they had a success rate of 25.8% in the last 3 quarters of that game. They only ran 29 plays from quarters 2 to 4. They had a 16% success rate, a 35 passing success rate. They only had 2 explosive plays. If you watch this Rams team, they've been steamrolling everybody, running the ball, throwing the ball, doing whatever they wanted. And the Seahawks defense actually really put them in the lion tamer outside the opening script. And then a couple short yardage plays, which were designer plays. That's credit to the Rams because they can get to it. But this Seahawks team is just still legit. Yes, the run game's not great, but I still think it could be okay enough because I think the passing game's so explosive and I think this defense is so, so good. So that's my thing. I know that I still consider them a contender. And maybe the point is they're still maybe a top 5, top 6 team if you want to go that way. But that is the thing I know.
I like it. Look, anytime that Sam Darnold has the 4 interception game, I think the conversation about the team is going to be what it is, which is, yeah. You know, see, told you so. It's only a matter of time until Sam Darnold melts down. And obviously, you are a member of the oligarchy. I am not a member of the oligarchy. So I think I can maybe I can represent the plebs here a little bit more than you. But I will say, that I don't feel that way about Darnold after this game. I don't feel like, oh, okay, see, the meltdown is coming at any moment. I think he was always maybe living on a little bit of a razor's edge and actually making some of the same. I think people just didn't realize, oh, yeah, he's making 1 or 2 plays a week that we're just like, geez, man, let's try to not do that. But it was just always coming in these blowout scripts where it just doesn't affect the game at all. Yep. So, like, it wasn't that, oh, that was the old Sam. He's been doing this all year long. a good defense on the other side, which, I mean, Chris Shula is definitely going to be in conversations as a head coach. He's been great as that defensive coordinator, and he's put Sam Darnold in this blender before. We have seen it. I think that was just, hey, you got living on that razor's edge more in this game than you probably have before. But still, you see so much good out of Seattle in that game. Like you said, it was a close competitive contest throughout. And even if you just, again, to bring back the football dork talking point, I don't know when you want to get into this, but from the 13 personnel stuff, I tweeted this morning. This past week, week 11, was the Rams. They had a 22% success rate out of 13 personnel. You look at the games previous, it's like 67%, 57%, 50%, 50% ever since they started leaning into it. And this was the first time their usage of it did not get outpaced by their efficiency out of it. And that's because that Seahawks defense is awesome. And they look at you and say, oh, cute. Cool little personnel package you got there. Guess what? We're going to play our nickel to basically everything because we have Nicky Amanwari who can be that guy for us. And yeah, I come out of that game thinking like that's a defense that can win the Super Bowl. And as long as your offense can be on the right side of variance, I don't feel any differently about Seattle after that game than I did previously.
That's was before going into the game. That's what I was saying it out loud and also to myself was, no matter who loses this game, let's not overdo it. Let's not the takeaway be like, oh, this team sucks now. Because going into this week, I was like, these are two of the best teams in the NFL. And this is just a great matchup that they have. And that's what that game felt like. It was two awesome defenses. And it came down to a couple turnovers, a lot of turnovers, and some other just big situational plays. I mean, even looking up, like, so that was – the Rams had a 34% success rate on the day, which is one of the worst ones they've ever had with Stafford as their quarterback. And all the other games that they're below 35%, which isn't a lot since 2021, they have lost those games. Like, they won this game because their defense, like you said, with Chris Shula is good, but the Seahawks were still moving the ball. It was just they had turnovers. And that's why I always look at, because turnovers, some teams do some things to help with turnovers, how aggressive you are, how good you are at punching out the ball, which everyone's bringing up this season, how well you can do some of those things, how many bodies you have towards the ball. But we always say there's variance with turnovers. So you kind of look at down-to-down success rate, down-to-down explosives, how you move the ball on first and second down. That's why I kind of look at, and the Seahawks were still able to move the ball, even if it wasn't imperfect, or it wasn't perfect throughout the thing. So just want to kind of just say those were two awesome teams going at it. And yeah, Seahawks are still a contender. All right, Matt, moving on to your next point here. What's the next thing that you know?
I know that Ben Johnson was a home run hire for the Bears. I mean, I just think that it's everything that you wanted it to be. And in ways that you might not have expected either, because I think everybody knew, like, hey, he's going to be this offensive guy. He's going to come in here and he's going to be, you know, a force to be reckoned with as a play caller, play designer. And I think we've seen a lot of that. I don't think it's been perfect for Ben Johnson, by the way, as he's juggled being the offensive architect, the play caller on game day, and then also being the head coach. And that's a learning experience. But what we, I think, have seen is that this team wins close games. Yeah, it's just always funny whenever we're talking about a team winning close games, you know, whatever, it's always, are they getting away with it or is this a skill? And I do think that the Bears, I think it's a little bit more skill than getting away with it. I mean, you're going to get lucky. Football's about getting lucky at some point too. You know, you got to have the breaks go your way. That's not something new. That's not something revelatory. And some breaks have gone their ways, but they've also shown up big in late game moments, even when sometimes they put themselves in bad situations by kicking the freaking ball at the area where you're not supposed to and giving the team a chance to go down and get a field goal there, which Cairo Santos kind of owned up to, even though he ultimately was the reason they won the game, but he also was like, I put us in that position too. So I think this looks like a team that's pretty well coached. I think they come into these games prepared. And the thing that I think, number one, they're leading the division currently in the NFC North. I don't know if that's going to hold the rest of the season, but it is right now the reality of the situation, which I think is well outside of expectations for everybody. Ben Johnson has already won more games on the road than Matt Eberflus did during his entire tenure as the head coach. So there is that. amazing stat that I love. But the other thing, the reason I think this is a home run hire too is because I think offensively – it's been good and trending in the right direction, but there's just so much more room for growth, which I think is really encouraging that it's already at a good level. And, you know, we've talked about this before, the week by week sort of is Caleb Williams good discussion or not, it is nauseating. But I even think in a game like this past week where he completed 50% of his passes, lowest of the week, I think you can see moments where he has been let down by some of the players around him. And some of that is, I do think they're a little bit caught between two worlds, right? Some of the veterans here, like DJ Moore, is just like a complete non-factor in this offense. And I think DJ might be able to have some level of a little mini rebirth somewhere else, but it's just not going to be here. It's just clear, like, it's just not working with him. And then you get Cole Kmet, he's still there, but like Colson Loveland flashes every single week. Luther Burden has had some flashes, but he's not really quite there yet in terms of being a reliable player, but he did out snap and out, you know, route participate a guy like Olamide Zaccheaus for the first time all year. So there's been growth there. I think Rome Odunze and Caleb Williams have a great connection, even if some, like, he missed him on a couple of plays this past week. And, you know, Rome's also put some passes into the ground, but defenses are starting to account for him and like try to take him out of games. And now it's just, can some of these other guys step up? But the guys that they're asking to do that are rookies. Like, they're young players. So if those guys can continue to get better, which isn't a guarantee, but if they can continue to get better, like, I just think that there's a lot of room for growth here. So if I was a Bears fan, I would feel like we hit a home run with this hire.
Absolutely. I kind of played out how, kind of, again, talking about preseason takes, and I was thinking, okay, after their bye week, they're really going to improve. And it just sometimes in the heat of the moment, I'm like, they are getting better, right? They're winning games, I know, and I'm watching and rewatching. I'm like, no, this feels better. This is good, better. And I'm looking at stats. I'm like, okay, it is getting better. And so now it's like kind of like we're here. And I'm like, it's kind of an, it's not an I told you so, because trust me, it's not been perfect. Like you said, they still have way too many procedural snaps before the balls even snap, like illegal formations. They've had plenty. They're bottom 10 and how many snaps they get per, or how many penalties they get per snap. And so you still see that. And I'm glad you brought up the 50% completion rate with Caleb, is because there's not a ton of gimmies throwing the ball in this offense, and that's by design. Ben Johnson has stated multiple times that he just hunts explosives. And again, I can't say this enough. I'm a big believer in what they try to do. And when I watch it, it's, his success rate is still super high. Not super high, but high compared to the completion percentage. I think his success rate on that game was like 45, 46, 47%, somewhere in that range, which is fine. That's acceptable, even though he only has a 50% completion rate. So that's why it's always kind of nice to look at success rate sometimes. It's like, yeah, he didn't hit a couple lows, but guess what? All these were valid passes that were leading to successful plays, on top of the Garacha moments where he's making three guys miss, you know, Matador moments, or whatever you want to call it, where he's making guys miss in the backfield, free runners, I should say, blitzers, pass rushers. And I just really like what this offense is doing. It is 11th, I think, in EPA per play since the season started. It feels like a top 10 offense right now to me, as far, and it's still not perfect, like you said. They're still figuring out the personnel, but even, it's cool watching a guy like Luther Burden, who I considered a good athlete, but a little bit of a loose player as far as route running, as far as details, as far as usage, which is why I kind of had him maybe a guy that I'd prefer just outside the first round than maybe taking the top 20, which is where they took him, is that now I see the details really growing with him. He still had a drop, but, you know, winning one-on-ones, getting to his route depth. He had a really nice block on a DJ Moore run on third down, where he was buried the guy for the Vikings. And that was really impressive to me. It's like, okay, you're not just being the gimmicky guy. Like, you're actually doing the dirty work stuff. They're trying to get him going. And then I watched, you know, their run game is just cooking every week. And since I brought up a version of the stat before, but I kind of updated it here. Since 2013, the Bears have played 206 regular season games, okay? Five of their top 11 rushing performances in terms of success rate have happened just this season. Five of their top 11. And yes. So Bengals week 9 was number one since 2013, which is, okay, Bengals defense, we know, terrible. Yeah. Commanders, another bad defense. But again, you want to make the bad defenses. That's the point of this. Commanders week 6, Cowboys week 3, Saints week 7, Vikings week 11, all in their top 11 in performances, all above 53% or 52 and change. Going back to 2002, it's six of their top 16 performances have come this season of 382 games. So they're doing it under center. It's a traditional offense, and you get to see, and that's really good because it lifts the floor for Caleb and stuff. But then you get to see some of Caleb's special moments in creation and how good he's getting in the pocket, which he was already better at than people realize. But man, he does the magician stuff, but working from the pocket, he's firing that thing over the middle. And intermediate defenders like linebackers aren't giving him as many issues. Like he's just throwing it past him or throwing it over him, as opposed to getting spooked by it and going like, ah, I don't really like this. So you're starting to see some more stuff really pop with this offense. They're number two in explosive play rate. It's a top 10 offense that they're fourth in rushing success rate, second in yards before contact, before rush, eighth in yards per play, 11th in EPA per play, 11th in passing, seventh in rushing. The passing game is getting a little more consistent, but man, they can hunt these explosives. So yeah, I agree with you that this is something we definitely know. This was a home run hire, and the pairing with Caleb Williams has been really, really good.
Yeah.
Defense.
I would also say too, just real quick. Defense. We'll see about that. We'll see where the team goes. I would also just say too, yeah. I mean, you know, sometimes these locker room videos, you don't know what to make of it, but I think he was generally regarded as a guy that was a little bit more of the, you know, reserved kind of play caller nerd type Ben Johnson, but yeah. Definitely seems to have those guys fired up and believing as well, which I think is also a big part of this.
He's very thoughtful. He's intense, yeah. But you can tell he loves football and not in the like, rah, rah, I'm going to like do an Oklahoma drill, yeah, love football, more in the
loves the
details of the game.
That's a good part.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm a big fan. Like I loved him as a coordinator, Ben Johnson. And I'm with you. I was like, oh, how's his personality going to be, all that? Cause he seems intense. When I've watched him be thoughtful and I don't want to say warm, but be maybe not as intense. It's like, oh, you got a lot to you. Watch again, like you said, some of these videos can be out of context, good or bad. When he gets introduced as the Bears head coach and he walks into Hallis Hall in Chicago and he talks to like staffers, watch him there, because he's not taken by surprise. Like, oh, I got to talk to like, you know, the cooks in the building, yeah. And stuff. You can tell he was prepared to talk to them. And it was very genuine. I know these are just things that you can say now because they're winning. But these are little things that I kind of like, I keep tabs on, like, because that just shows he's very thoughtful with everything. And it's cool to see the results are happening because the process has been good. And I'm just excited to see where it keeps going because, yeah, this offense, it's a top 10 offense. I think it's a playoff team, even if they're not perfect. But I don't know if they'll win the division, but I do think this is a playoff team, like, all the way, because how this offense is. And the defense is doing enough and they're getting healthier. I'm going to stay in the division with my next one, NFC North. This is just about the Lions. There's a lot of discussion on the Lions and their offense. And I just want to just reiterate this. The Lions defense is elite. The Lions defense, and talking about that Rams game that just happened with the Seahawks, talking about the personnel that these defenses are using. I believe a lot of people are talking about dime personnel right now because it's just like the jingling keys. It's a defense that's really good is running dime. So that's the new trend in the NFL, even though Bill Belichick running dime like 15 years ago and Spags has run dime, yeah, for a decade and everyone's run dime. Okay, but that's the new thing. Friggin' Lions are in base 75% of the time on early downs, first and second down. They get 4-3 defense out there, a variation of it, but they get their four defenders, three linebackers out there, and they just beat the crap out of you. And I love it. They have injuries all out throughout this defense, especially on the back end, and you would never know at times because that front seven is so awesome. And how they do it with Brian Branch, because they're able to do some things out of base with three linebackers, because Branch is able to cover guys, even as a back end safety, where he can still kind of play as a slot, even though he's a safety. But they're six in DVOA. They play base 63% of their total snaps, 75% of their early down snaps. They are literally the best tackling team in the NFL. In terms of missed tackle rate, they're big, they're aggressive. I think Kelvin Shepard's doing an awesome job right now. Even some of the blitz stuff he's kind of added on and kind of diversified some of those looks. And this is with Kirby Joseph hurt, Terry Arnold hurt, DJ Reed hurt. They still play man coverage and they still take it to offenses. They just line up and beat the crap out of you. And I love it. So I just wanted to, this is something I know now. I had questions about how Shepard would do. I saw some sloppiness early in the season. Now I'm like, no, this is a good unit. This is an elite unit, and they do it in their own way. And I think that's so cool that they're just like, yep, we're getting big. We're going to have big seven front defenders. And all right, are you going to run it on us? No. All right, try and pass it on us. So, okay, well, we're going to beat the crap out of you there too. Just it's refreshing. I don't know if refreshing might be the word, but it's cool to watch this unit play and play their own style.
Yeah, I love a defense that just beats the shit out of an opposing offense, and that's certainly this unit where I think if you play the Lions, you come out of there after the game just feeling, whew, glad that one's over. Like, let's get to the next game on the schedule here. I think their linebacker play is really strong. I think Kelvin Shepard has been impressive, especially lately. It seems like, look, they lost both coordinators, and I think we can say objectively that the hire a defensive coordinator to replace Aaron Glenn has gone better than the hire of offensive coordinator John Morton, obviously not calling the plays anymore. So I think that Shepard, again, is brought some new this was already a team that, you know, fed off a lot of energy. And now I feel like the energy is even higher on this team right now. You can really, really feel that when you watch them. So yeah, just a strong defense that gets after it up front. And even in a game against the Eagles this past week, where they don't necessarily have, you know, two weeks ago, whatever, they don't really necessarily have their best moment from like Aiden Hutchinson. And they still come away with a strong defensive outing, I thought. Like, that was just, this was last week. My weeks are all messed up. Yeah, this is obviously last week's game where they didn't necessarily get the best moment out of Aiden Hutchinson, who is their best player, but the defense still rocks over the course of the entire night. So, yeah, just awesome unit over there in Detroit, which really is helping their playoff odds, in my opinion, even if they are right now technically not winning the division.
Yeah, no, I know, but I feel really good about them. There, you mentioned Jack Campbell, the linebackers. That's what's cool is that, you know, like, you want to get your best guys out there. Like, I know that sounds obvious, but some teams are still going like, well, we got to go nickel here or on offense. We got to go 11 here because it's third down. And the Lions are like, well, our best 7 or our best 11 is getting the linebackers out there. And it's, I think Jack Campbell's played, I say Pro Bowl level. I got to see other linebackers, but man, he's playing like an all pro. I would even say second team all pro. Yeah. I got to really stack it up. Alex Anzalone is a good player and Barnes is a good player. And then their D tackles are monsters. Roy Lopez, Aleem McNeil, DJ Reader, Tyreek Williams. Like there's a reason they're able to stuff the tush push like multiple times. And they have done that all year. It's because they're big. They tackle well, they hit the crap out of you. It's fun. And the last closing thought here is, because I can't help myself, I always look at suplex, you know, success rate, explosive play rate on early downs, first and second down. Want to see how your offense is moving in the flow of the game. There's 6 teams right now with an above average offense suplex and above average defense suplex. To me, these are contenders. So you got the Rams, you got the Seahawks, you got the Lions, you got the Packers, you got the Chiefs, spoilers, and you got the Ravens, which was another one that was like, oh, okay, Ravens.
Yeah.
But since week 5, I wanted to bring this up because that's the last 6 weeks. Rams, Seahawks, Lions, Packers, Chiefs, Bears. The Bears are in there since week 5. They're second in offensive suplex rate since week 5. 17th in defense, but technically it's above average of current league averages. So just had to mention that, had to throw that out there. But yeah, the Lions team, I know the offense doesn't feel perfect, but still a good offense. And this defense, though, it's really, really good. I had a bonus one here, and that's I wasted all my time with the Cardinals this season. And that's something I know. And that's all, like Forrest Gump said, that's all I got to say about that. Yeah.
I mean,
I told you before the show, coming. you and Stone just both went, yeah.
Yeah, we know.
you guys even joke about it. You're just like, yeah, no, we know, Nate. Yeah, we know. So yeah, we know. Yeah,
it's good to hear you admit it. It's good to hear you admit it. The first step to solving your problem is admitting that you have one, and it's good that you can finally admit that the Cardinals' fascination was a problem.
I'm going to blame Clayton Adams for the last 2 years, and I'm going to blame Nick Rawls on defense for keeping me interested in this team. And I still think Nick Rawls is good. I still think the defense is pretty good, but man, that offense is just every part about this team, man. It's just, I can't wait to do it again with another team in about 7 months from now, but we're going to take our last break and then we're going to come back with what we think we know. See you guys in a sec. All right, we are back with what we think we know about the NFL right now. Something we're not quite sure yet, but it's on our radar, which I think this category is even a little bit more fun to talk about because you can really throw some thoughts out here. But Matt, Let's go with your first one. What do you think you know about this NFL season?
Oh, God. Yeah, this is the one that I think has a chance to just look stupid in hindsight. And I think you even might, your next point really might make this look stupid.
And I had this point before I saw yours. So that's what's actually pretty funny about it. But yes, keep going.
I think, oh my God, famous last words here. I think the AFC playoffs are not going to be the same old story. And what I mean by that is I think that we're going to get some fresh teams. We're going to get some new quarterbacks, et cetera, et cetera. Okay. I think the last, what do you want to call it? 5 years of the AFC playoffs have basically been, okay, well, when is insert Lamar Jackson, Joe Burrow, Josh Allen going to meet up with Patrick Mahomes? And, you know, when is that going to happen? And look, I still do think that is a compelling story. Like, can Lamar Jackson or Josh Allen get to the Super Bowl? Can they get through Kansas City? Yeah. And like, if that's the way this goes, I think that's very, it's not going to be the Bengals. We know that. Like, the same old story is the Bengals aren't going to make the playoffs for the third straight year, I believe, now at this point. So that actually is kind of becoming a same old story, whole separate conversation. Yeah. But these other guys, I do think that we will get some level of new faces deeper into the postseason for this team, because I just look at Buffalo, Kansas City, Baltimore right now, and I see chinks in the armor for all three of those teams, to the point that an organization like New England, you know, like Denver, like Indianapolis, you know, I don't know about the Chargers and Jaguars, who are the 6th and 7th seed right now if things ended today, or any of those teams, but I think we could
get, have you seen them block? Geez,
Chargers season is legitimately pissing me off. So I don't really want to talk about it, but because it's pissing me off. So I feel like I was so right about that team for so many reasons, and then just classic. And I'm not even usually the guy that's buying into the Chargers hype in years past. Like, this is the Chargers year. This is the Chargers year. Like the typical media narrative.
Yeah.
But this year, I was like, I think this team's going to be really good. And, of course, they chargered in the way that they always do. Yeah, and well, who gives a shit about the process? Who cares? The results are going to be the same old thing that it always is, which is a disappointing season for this team. So, super annoyed at that. But, again, regardless, I think we're going to see some new faces, new storylines. Drake May, obviously, is the biggest fish right now. You know, I think he's going to be a big part of the playoffs. Just the New England Patriots as a whole. I love watching that team. I think they're so well coached on both sides of the ball. I think they're really disciplined. I think they also have matchup advantages that they can take. God, like, Josh McDaniels is the offensive coordinator right now. He's doing such a great job to put defenders in conflict with everything. We saw multiple examples of that in the Jets game. We've seen it all season long, and Drake May is awesome. Denver, obviously, we'll see what Bo Nix, you know, the fatal flaw, Bo Nix, we'll see what he can become. But I mean, he had a better game last week than the week before. That's for sure. And I think that their team as a whole is good. And then Indianapolis, kind of same storyline there. We'll see what Daniel Jones is when it gets to crunch time. But I think the team is really good. So again, this is all usually famous last words when we're talking about the AFC playoffs, and these little fascination teams get blown away by the wayside at the end of the year, and it's just the same old Chiefs, Bills, Ravens. But I don't know. I it's a mix of a take that I'm not just writing in pen that these teams that we think we know are gonna get it right, and I'm also holding out a little bit of optimism for these newer faces here. So I think we'll see some new faces, fresh teams in the AFC playoffs this year.
Yeah, the even going into the season, like when we were doing prediction stuff, where it was kind of the AFC felt so chalky that it was kind of like, all right, this feels weird. I hate when everything's some chalk or everybody picks the same team. That's when the NFL just does its thing and goes, what you think you know, but you have no idea. This is the life of the NFL season. I don't want to spoil my next point, even though I've already hinted at it, but I even was going through like what the current AFC contenders are just based on betting odds. And number one right now was the Bills. But to me, it's like all these AFC teams are just so flawed, where I think, yes, the AFC has the best quarterbacks. There's a couple in the NFC, don't get me wrong, but it's the NFCs are, their teams are so much more complete. Like, so I would just mention all the teams that were in top 10, this top 10, that it's mostly NFC teams. It's mostly, you know, it's Rams, Seahawks, Packers, Lions, Even the Bears are getting up there. Those are all NFC teams. We got the Eagles, whose defense is rolling right now. NFC, NFC, NFC. AFC, it's where like, okay, we go to the Bills. Love their run game. Josh Allen's Josh Allen. They got a Joey Bosa pass rush, but the defense is bad. I know they can do some cool stuff. They did something against the Chiefs. They'll get turnovers. It's not a good defense. Like, and it's just like, no. It's just one of those where it's just so damning. But the other side of this argument is, well, nobody's perfect in the AFC. So really that, which is going to be so much fun to keep track on these last 2 months. And once we get to playoff time, because then it's like really going to be matchup based as opposed to elite teams, you know, like where every team has this weakness is like, can they pick at that? Can they adjust to that? Do they have data to adjust to that? You go down the list, Colts, their run game. They have an explosive, awesome passing game. They have a smart defense, but I don't think the defense is very good. It's more like middle of the pack, even if I think they have good moments, but they might get the Lou Anarumo kind of bump and playoff time because he's such a great game planner. And Daniel Jones is always kind of on pumpkin watch. Like whether that's fair to him or not, like you just don't know when he's going to crap out and just because I haven't seen it before. And I think that's fair. Broncos, amazing defense, good old line. Bo Nix is kind of the weakness. Yeah, he did have a better game. He did. He had a much more consistent game, especially against pressure, I thought, against the Chiefs. He actually was getting the ball out rather than doing his kind of footwork parallel to the line of scrimmage stuff. He actually was getting the ball out. And I was like, good, get the ball in play. Just make play, get the ball in play. Run game's fine, but not great. You can see kind of the weakness of RJ Harvey. He's explosive, but he can kind of have some inconsistent runs, I think.
Yeah.
That's
losing
why
Dobbins is tough.
Best with the Dobbins. Yeah. And that's, it wasn't the greatest run game in the world anyways, but at least it was fine. And that's where I now think it's going to be even a little bit more boom busty, which, you know, it's not a total strength. We'll see. Ravens is are improving. And I got to rewatch the Browns game. I'll be open and saying I haven't watched that game in all 22 yet. But they have Lamar. I know he had a weird game on Sunday where he's trying to do a little too much. The defense is improving. I want to see how much, but it is improving. It's not the worst in the league. It's more of like an average, at least maybe above average unit. But I do think the run game has taken back where it's still fine to good, but it's not otherworldly like it's been in the past. And then the Patriots kind of don't trust the run game completely, even though it's getting better. And I don't trust the defense completely. And they just lost Milton Williams for a few weeks. So just wide open AFC. So like what you're saying is that it's not the same old story because any of these teams have a chance and any of these teams have a chance to make a run.
Yeah. So ultimately, maybe it does come back to just the same old, but it feels wide open. And so
I'm trying not to spoil my point here.
I know, but let's get into it. Cause I think you basically essentially just with your next one, refute everything, not refute, but put some doubt into what I just said, which is just the little optimistic part of my heart wants to believe that we're going to see something new this year. And maybe that's where that's coming from.
And I agree with you. Cause I even going into the season, I wanted some change, some new faces, some of the young quarterbacks. And I know that Drake May has really ascended this year and has the Patriots passing game rolling. But my next point, and this kind of just a continuation, it actually worked out great. And what I think I know is the Chiefs are still the AFC favorites. Yeah, I haven't mentioned them just a second ago. Currently not even on the playoff list. They are in the hunt, technically, at 5-5. They have a 55% playoff odds, according to ESPN's FPI. New York Times has them at 56%. So same thing there. Why I say this, and this is not just to be lazy. It's a little bit lazy. And going, I trust Patrick Mahomes, and I trust Steve Spagnuolo, and I trust Andy Reid. But even just underlying, they're one of these teams, them, the Packers, there's a couple other teams that on rewatch, every time I rewatch them, I'm like, oh yeah, you guys are good. They're not the best that I've seen of this Chiefs version of the Chiefs, but they're still a good team. And they still have Mahomes and they still have enough pieces. So I'm even looking at the stats here. They have this is Mahomes' highest rate of passes, 10 or more air yards since 2021. This offense is better than I think people are realizing. They have the lowest turnover rate since Mahomes has been a starter. The lowest stuff rate by any NFL offense since 2002. They have a 43% rushing success rate this year. And yes, they do not get a lot of explosive runs. It's something that's going to be very frustrating. It's not going to get better because this is who their running back room is. But they're above the number that I look at to be a true contender, which is 40%. They've won a Super Bowl when they only had a 33% rushing success rate. So they can do this even when they don't have the threshold number I look at. Their explosive pass rate right now is 13.9%. I've looked at this. Usually teams that make it to the Final Four, it's 14%. So they're right there. They're right there to be a contender. Their offense is 0.13 EPA per play. It's the third best offense in terms of EPA since Mahomes was the starter with the Chiefs. 2018 was 0.21, one of the best offenses we've ever seen. 2022 was 0.16, and then it's this offense. They're scoring on the highest rate of drives since Mahomes' first year as a starter in 2018. 48.9%, second in the NFL this year. And this is the one thing that's kind of a knock on them this year is they've actually been worse on third down than they've ever been since Mahomes has been a starter. But that's one of those things that I've seen Mahomes usually just be incredible on third down, incredible on third and long. So it's almost one of these things where they might regress in a good way, you know, even though they're fine right now, but they might still uptick. And that's the biggest blemish for them right now on top of the lack of rushing explosives. But they're third in DVOA, sixth in passing, fourth in rushing. They're not far behind the Rams and Colts ahead of them in DVOA. I know it's just DVOA, but I watch this team on eye test. They don't make a lot of mistakes. They stay ahead of the chains. They have enough explosive passes. I know the deep balls or whatever, like they should stop throwing deep balls to anyone not named Tyquan Thornton because Xavier Worthy, whatever. Hollywood Brown's whatever. They're just not big. And so that's why it's just these small, speedy guys are just going to drive me nuts. But they can create explosives in other ways, passing the ball as well. You know, Rashee Rice catching runs. Some Travis Kelce's finding, rediscovering his niche, I think, right now against zone stuff. So, and that's just talking about the offense. I think the defense is above average. It's not great. But again, looking at the AFC right now, they're the one team that I don't think has a crippling weakness. They're not great, but they're above average or better in every facet of the game. To me, that's a contender. Because on top of it, they have Patrick Mahomes. So that's kind of pushes over the top. They just do enough for me that in the AFC that I think is wide open, I still think they're the team to beat, even though they're technically not even in the playoffs right now. They only have a 55% chance of making the playoffs. I still think that they're going to end up being the team to beat come playoff time. They're the monsters at the end of the dream for every other team.
I think I just flat out disagree with this. And I think that's
fine.
I mean, that's what they want. The people want us to disagree, right? You're probably going to end up being right because you're siding with the Chiefs, the team that has been the dynasty of the last, you know, few seasons here. Yeah. So you're definitely on the right side of history. I am on the wrong side of it. Yeah, you're right. Once again, Nate Tice siding with the oligarchy. Meanwhile, me, man of the people, wants to see a new team represent the AFC in the Super Bowl. So yes, the rebellion is with me. But regardless, the thing I think actually the crippling weakness for this team is not, it's a little bit more ineffable. It's like harder to point to in a stat. And to me, it's just the stubbornness of where this team and like a little bit of the staleness that we've talked about with them. And I think at some point that bites you in the ass. And I think we've seen it in regular, I mean, again, 56% chance to make the playoffs. We're talking about them as the favorite in the conference. To me, it's just at some point, like the margin for error just gets really, really thin. And I think this team obviously has a lot of baked in equity in terms of trust that, they can live on those margins and they can win. But Colts, Cowboys, Texans, Chargers, Titans, Broncos, and then Raiders week 18. I mean, there's some cupcakes in there, but it's not just they can run the table on that schedule, no question about it. And again, it comes back to some of this stubbornness with particularly how the offense is built. And I think defense too, you know, kind of a little bit just, hey, we're never going to die. Chris Jones is going to be this difference maker forever. And maybe he will be for the rest of the season. But I think they could use one more pass rusher on that side of it. And then if you look at just on offense, it's the run game that we've talked about. And the talent at the running back position, I cannot believe they ran back this running back room and only added Breshard Smith to the mix, who's not even really a running back. And then the receiver room, Patrick Mahomes is 24th in adjusted yards per attempt when throwing against man coverage this year. And he's 23rd since Rashee Rice got back. And to me, I will never get off this, that I think they could use one real wide receiver in this room. And it just drives me crazy that we're still talking about, well, don't worry, throw one more small speedster at it, that'll fix the problem. I mean, I think Tyquan Thornton's a nice player. I think, you know, maybe he should play a little bit more, but he's not exactly the guy that I'm describing here in terms of a one-on-one route him up man coverage player to go to in critical situations. And you just feel when a good defense can get against them right now and take away some of their fastballs, especially against the zone coverage stuff, I just don't know that they have a response. I think Mahomes, when they go against zone, he's going to find the right answer. He's going to get through progressions, left, right, all of it, the whole deal. But I think if they go against a good defense, that can man up on these receivers, I think that becomes a problem in the passing game. To me, I just think there's a little bit too many flaws to consider them the favorite when they also haven't positioned themselves as that type of team just simply based on the fact that their record does not reflect that.
I think a better way to phrase it might be like, I think that they are the favorites to win the AFC, not like as far as like they're, I don't know how else to put it. Like it, once it comes playoff time,
I think I know what you mean. I totally get what you mean here. You're not saying like,
and I get what you're saying too.
You're not saying they're secretly actually the best team or they, you know, whatever, but I mean, by no means would any human being be surprised if they snuck into the playoffs, which they essentially have to do at this point. They have to sneak into the playoffs.
Yep.
They put themselves really behind the eight ball in the division. And again, they've got not the easiest schedule in the world here coming up. They put themselves behind the eight ball. They sneak in. And then just by hook or by crook, they win in big games because they always win in big games. I mean, nobody would be surprised by that.
So like, I love your man coverage point because it's obvious. Like the team structure is not great. Like, and we had a rant, you and I, on this episode, on a Tuesday episode a month ago. I ranted about like the team makeup, the lack of ideas. It's very stale. And I agree with that still. I still think that they get in their own way with the skill guys that they think they need, or what they think they should build a team out of when they should be going for a different body type altogether. I think the offensive line, though, has been, I almost said beautifully reconstructed, but reconstructed in a really nice way. Like Suamataia has been good at left guard. Now they got Simmons back. They actually have some depth at O-line, which they didn't have the last year or two. I think Creed Humphrey's been great. The running back room, I totally agree with you. Just like, it's more about like, what were you thinking, Brett Veach and Andy Reid and all these decisions. Even on defense, they keep bringing back the same retreads as opposed to maybe some new blood up front. So those are more just like philosophical like frustrations. And that's what's so hard to parse it sometimes, is like getting out of the way of that and also just watching and seeing the review. Because the man coverage stuff, you see it. Like, and it's just the offense can be so gimmicky at times. They're getting back to more RPOs, which I do think is good overall, but they need to run the ball more a little bit. Like, it's kind of in a weird way. I'm talking about every side of my mouth here because that's just, they're so imperfect with some of the things that they go about it. The man coverage thing, though, you look at who they play against. They play the Colts this week, more zone heavy. Cowboys, like, who's guarding them? Texans is tough because Texans play a ton of man coverage. That's tough. Right. Yeah. Chargers, heavy zone. Titans, whatever. Then they play the Broncos again, and then they play the Raiders again. Once you come playoff time, and this is how every AFC team is right now, and that's what I think the overarching point of our 2 points of what we think we know is that all these teams are imperfect. It's going to be so matchup based once we get the playoff time that I think it's like, unless you can play man coverage against this team for 60%+ of the snaps, the Chiefs are going to be like really in it and in these games and being a good team, obviously. Like, that's their biggest bugaboo. But all right, who they go against, like the Texans aren't exactly a lock to make the playoffs yet. Like, we'll see. If they play the Broncos again, yes, that's one team that like has a little bit of advantage on them, but they also have their defense against their offense. So it's just one of these things that the AFC is just going to be so much of like, all right, who they go against, as opposed to like, this team's just a total juggernaut. So just like a little, it's not like a total pushback of what you're saying, cause I agree with you, but it's one of these things where it's like, it might not matter, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like, because they might go in the AFC Fair. And they get in the playoffs and they go, we got the Colts this week. Okay, cool. We match up well against them. We got the Jags. If the Jags win the division, oh yeah, we're good. Yes, I know they lost to the Jags, but they also had like a 70% success rate in that game and lost the game. The Chiefs did. So just going through matchups and everything too. But I think the takeaway from Matt and I's points is that the AFC is just like a shrug of the shoulders about what this conference is. And it's going to be fun to watch it unravel. But
I was going to say, it makes me excited for AFC playoff time. That's the take. That's the real take. We know that. We should be very excited about the AFC playoffs one way or another.
Because no matter what, it's going to be, I think, valid matchups where there's not going to be any big spreads. It's going to be great. Speaking of spreads, the Chiefs are favored this week against the Colts. -3.5. Which Shiel Kapadia from The Ringer mentioned to me that they would be favored against every other NFL team at this point right now on a neutral field, the Chiefs. And I said, even over the Rams? And they're like, yeah, point more over the Rams. Which is like, so I there go, maybe Nate. There's more, some other things that are going to
more big shadowy figures.
I'm trying to get around a table with a nice shiny globe glowing in our faces, just, you know, just to overcome us. I'm picturing something that probably no one gets the reference anyways. But let's bring it on home, Matt. Things we think we know. What was your last one here for the 2025 season?
I think we know, if we're being honest with ourselves, this is not the Packers' year. And it really felt like this was their year at the start of the season.
Yeah.
You know, right before the season when they make the Micah Parsons trade, and it adds on to a, you know, a whole another dimension for a defense that was good last year, going to take them to the next level. And I think the defense, for the most part, has been good this year. But I think when you look at the offense, there's just too many injuries to key players at this point. Tucker Kraft, like if Tucker Kraft is playing, I probably don't say this. I'm probably not doing this segment right now. But he is a transformative loss, and I think we've already felt that through the two games that he hasn't been there. You know, they try to get into more 11 personnel looks, and they're just not that great at that because their receiver depth is so banged up right now. I mean, Christian Watson, fresh off the ACL tear, has been like their most impactful pass catcher, which I think they wanted him to be somebody, oh, we sprinkle in here. You know, Matthew Golden's just been kind of forgettable. Romeo Doubs is a good player, but he's not this like load-bearing type of receiver necessarily. They still miss Jaden Reed. I don't know when Jaden Reed's going to be back. Now Josh Jacobs is dealing with an injury. Their offensive line plan, I think, has not worked out to the fullest capabilities possible this year. So to me, I just look at the Green Bay Packers, and I think I probably picked them, I think, to be the NFC team, I think I might have gone Eagles. I think I went Eagles, but I did pick them to be the team that won the division. But yeah, and yeah, by the way, Eagles, I mean, talk about boring, but I think that the Packers probably, if I'm being honest with myself, and again, I just think I know this. I don't know this for sure, but I think I know that
right. The
Packers, it's probably not their year, even if it felt like it.
I think that's what's so frustrating is that some of the guys stay healthy. I'm still good with it. Again, totally. I rewatched the game with the Giants. The first game I rewatched this week on all 22 was Packers Giants, because Jordan Love was amazing against the Giants. Was amazing. It was one of the best performances I've watched this entire year. And the box score might not bear that out. I get that. Every ball was on the money, making great decisions. They had some drops and everything, but man, he was so good with everything he was doing. And that's what leaves me always to optimism. It's like, man, the offense does what you want it to do, because they can hunt these for these explosives. They can do this, they can do that. But that doesn't matter if they can't block and or the receivers are throwing to Bo Melton on key fourth downs, who was a defensive back just a couple months ago. Or, you know, just insert a different name there, or tight ends, where Luke Musgrave like has just completely fallen off as a player as far as catching the ball. He has not improved as a blocker. Josh Wiley, who I always liked with the Titans and was surprised no more teams didn't try and get him, he's probably been their best tight end since Tucker Kraft's injury. But I watch this team, and I think the defense is very good. I still do. I think they have a lot of good players. They have Micah Parsons. They have a good scheme that makes it really tough on opposing quarterbacks. They run a lot of zone. They got a lot of bodies near the ball all the time. Young players have stepped up, like Evan Williams is a really fun safety. And I think I'm with you where I'm trying to like figure out how to put it, because it's like, I'm still not completely out, like where I'm like, oh, they have zero shot of winning it all, or zero shot of making the Super Bowl, or anything like that. It's just a lot less likely than it was just a month or 2 months ago, like you're saying. Their schedule, they have the Lions, they have the Bears twice, they have the Broncos, the Ravens, and they have the Vikings twice. So, yeah, I know. It's not no gimmies, really. Because that's the thing with the Vikings. It's like, yes, I know McCarthy, ha, 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 ha. But they still have a run game, and they still have a defense that takes you to the cleaners if you're not ready. So it's just like, you know, it's not an easy game. They're like a bunch of pushovers right now. So, they can make a statement. They still have some cool highs. But like you said, the injuries have kind of just really crippled them. I mean, pun intended. It is what it is. Tucker Kraft is one of the best pass catchers in the league this year. I mean, it's just losing that is very impactful, especially when your offensive system is built to get him some of these underneath touches that turn into big plays.
Yeah, they just don't have the same safety valves, and you feel that every single week on offense, I think.
Every week. Yeah. And my kind of last little point with the Chiefs, too, is that like they need fresh ideas in that building. I meant to say that, too. I just want to get that thought out there. They just need fresh ideas. Fresh bodies, fresh ideas. Sorry.
Call us, guys. We're available.
All right, this is my last point. what I think I know. And this is because I want to write about this, but I'm just not finding the time to, or the perfect week to write about him, because there's not a lot of important games that this team is playing. But that is, I think Cam Ward is going to be A-okay. I have watched Cam Ward. I've reviewed him. I've watched a lot more games. And there's not a single stat I can point at that goes, oh, yeah, here's this is. It wasn't Drake May last year where it was like, oh, yeah, he has the seventh best success rate by a rookie quarterback since 2012. And everyone's acting like he just took a huge leap this year. He did take a leap, but it was there. He already took a big step in his first year in his rookie year. So, but when I'm watching Cam Ward, all the stats are awful. And I get that. When you, and no one's watching Titans games. I get that as well. You watch what he is doing. He is a good player and understands football and understands he a creative thrower. Got more, even more arm juice than maybe I even gave him credit for. I think he's not a great deep ball thrower because of his sidearm throwing style and lack of big hands. Like he has smallish hands. But as far as working underneath, as far as operating on RPOs, as far as getting rid of the ball promptly on time, as far as his eyes going in the right direction, as far as pocket movement, as far as understanding the offense and what the concept that's being run, the offensive flow as well, and the kind of just the operation, all of it is above what you want to see from a rookie quarterback. And I would even get to a good level for a rookie quarterback, even if the results haven't been great and that the Titans have already fired their head coach and that they're going to be the number one pick likely next year. He is going to be fine, and I would say good. And I think Titans fans should be pretty excited about what he is showing. And again, this team is a mess. They are a year away from being a year away. They need so much help at so many different spots, but they got the quarterback. And I think he's been shoved aside even from when he was drafted, because when he was drafted, the networks wanted to talk about a guy that went in the fifth round more than the guy that went number one overall. The Titans don't play a lot of national TV games, and they stink this year. I get all that. He's going to be fine. He's going to be good. And I'm very excited to watch his progression, especially if the rest of the Titans kind of get out of their own asses just a little bit. Who knows with that owner, but just a little bit. And you'll see more of Cam Ward. Like, oh, he might be figuring it out. He's a good player. I'm excited to kind of watch him keep progressing.
Couple things here. Number one, you know, they don't, you know, you said they don't complain any big games or anything. They do actually have, which this could be good and bad for Cam Ward, but they do have some playoff teams on the schedule the rest of the way. I mean, tough time to come out and say they're going to be A-OK when they go and they play the Seahawks in week 12. So that could look pretty bad this week, but yeah, he's going to get put in the Mike McDonald blender this week.
The Seahawks the next 3 weeks are like going to put some quarterbacks in just like the lion tamer. It's going to be ugly.
Oh my God. Yeah. It's Cam Ward, JJ McCarthy, Kirk Cousins. And then, then they get some real players.
And then it picks up, right? Yeah. It picks up the rest of the year.
Yeah. Danny Dimes in week 15. That'll be interesting. But yeah, so they get Seahawks, Jacksonville, Cleveland, who cares? Niners, Chiefs, Saints, Jaguars again. So they do have some, if the Titans can be normal, which they can't be, they could maybe play spoiler. But they probably won't, because I tend to think this situation is so brutal for Cam Ward. The other thing that you said, that I think maybe when you kind of have the Mahomes discussion too about why he's not the best deep ball thrower and some of the arm angles that he throws with in terms of the stats and stuff, I wonder if that's also a little bit of the Mahomes thing too. But you definitely feel it with Cam Ward, where because of the angle that he throws at, the ball just gets in, like, is in weird places, or it's not where the receiver is. Yeah, it fades on him. It's not really where the receiver expected to be. But then also, I don't say that for 1 second to cape up for the receivers on this roster, because this room is abysmal. It's abysmal. I mean, Calvin Ridley has had one of the most ridiculous seasons I could ever imagine. It's like, oh, he's back from the hamstring injury. One route into the game, breaks his fibula. He's out for the rest of the year. And he obviously was not playing well.
He's out.
Yeah. He's out. And he obviously had some really rough moments to start the year. But then Alec Iomanner is just like, oh my God, we're playing a fourth round rookie, and it looks like what you would expect. You know, Chimere Dike is a nice gadget player, but I mean, he's not really a real deal receiver. Van Jefferson led the team in targets and routes last week.
Yes, he did.
Come on. And I think that we also talked about the offensive line in the offseason as, oh, well, it'll be fixed this year. It's not. This is one of those things where you're right. Nobody's watching the Titans, so I'm sure some of the negativity around Cam Ward is like, well, the added additions to the offensive line. Okay, well, what do your eyes tell you when you watch this offensive line? Does that look like a team that it's going real well in Tennessee right now? I don't think so. So I'm kind of – I don't have a strong take about Cam Ward one way or another. The results obviously are atrocious, but I want to be open-minded that in a different situation, maybe it could look certainly better than it has so far. So I wonder what your definition of like A-OK is and where you think he lands. Like, is he, could he be what Caleb Williams is this year in year two? Like, could he get to that? Because I think Williams had obviously an atrocious statistical first season. And then I think a lot of things have gone right for him in terms of getting Ben Johnson, some of the players around him, stuff like that. We'll see if the Titans can pull that off in year two.
Right. That's the thing, is like the Bears, I mean, well, shoot, Ben Johnson's a great addition. They haven't had a real coach, but also they added Tooney. They have really talented receivers and pass catchers. Yeah, some of them are young, and I get that. But also, yeah, just the makeup of who he could throw the ball to. Even if just like, yeah, the Bears have Roman Dunze, but you know, Komet's fine. You know, I'm not the biggest Cole Komet guy, but I actually think he's been playing a lot better this year, a lot more consistent.
Sure.
But also, you know, Loveland's so talented. He's a freaking hoss, just a moose. Even if DJ Moore was just the number one receiver, like, you know, that's still much better than what the Titans are working with.
Much better than Van Jefferson.
Yes. Even Zacchaeus is better than what these guys are working with. So when I watch him, though, it's when I say A-OK, I mean, OK, this is not a bust. And this is not what I think. Okay. If you looked at stats and you looked at maybe what the Titans record and everything, and I know, again, like, I know no one's not watching, you just go, yeah, Cam Ward ain't it. Man, they should be really, all this stuff. What I'm looking is that this is a starter quality. This is a starting quality quarterback at the very least. This is a guy that in year two, those word acronym soup of stats that we throw out, DVOA, EPA per dropback, success rate and stuff, he's looking like more like the 18th, the 16th best quarterback in year two, you know, where it's like, okay, they're fine start. We got something to work with here. Where then year three is maybe that bump up into top 12 play, you know, kind of what Caleb's doing right now. I think I'm just a little more, everything with Cam Ward isn't like, it's one of these on, as I review him, I'm always more impressed by him on review and on when I'm really studying him. And that's another thing, differentiation for me. I watch guys on TV, then I'll maybe review a game where I'm watching everything. And then where I'll study a guy and study a player. And then that's where I look into the stats. I'm looking into like exactly, okay, out routes or RPOs. How are you just doing on these specific things? You have probably a similar system with receivers. So when I'm watching him and when I'm now studying him, when I study Cam Ward, I'm like, dude, this guy is good. Like he just like, I don't know. He just, it's so unique how he plays because he throws in, I mean, sidearm, true sidearm thrower. But it's for a reason. It's not just for trick shots. Yeah. It's because he's trying to throw it around a body or he's trying to get a throw off and get it on time. And this is the exact feeling I had when I watched him at Miami, even when I watched him at Wazoo when he was on my radar, is that it's not how I would teach a freshman in high school, like how to play quarterback, but it's on time and it's accurate. So it works. And he makes it work for him consistently. And that his timing in his head is way better then I think it looks because it just looks funky. But the results are actually in the process is actually what you want to get to. It's why I compare him to Roddy Mullen, the skateboarder, because he's technically sound, even though he's doing these things that look creative and crazy and wacky and doing a dark slide and all that. Now I'm going to skateboard references. We've gone too far on the spot, but we're now doing all these crazy things, but he's technically so sound and so technically sound with what he's trying to do that it works even better than what it appears to be. Maybe Andy Anderson is the better skateboarding reference. I'm again going way too far on this, but this is a starting quarterback that he's going to be extension worthy. Maybe that's the best way I could put it down the road. He's going to be worthy of an extension as opposed to like, oh, wow, Titans got to reset everything again. Like, no, they got their guy. And now it's just about the rest of the team just, again, pulling their heads out of their asses to prop him up like he should be propped up because it's a good player. And I'm excited to watch him keep going. I'm excited to write about him and really just show clips and show what the study looks like because it's cool stuff.
But yeah, well, we'll see if the Titans can get out of their own way.
Yeah, get to round out the show with start the show with Raiders talk, end the show with Titans talk. That's football 3-1 for you. in week 12, as after some of the best games of the year just got played on Sunday, you know, at least we're not talking about the Browns fifth round quarterback that played awful. But we're closing it out today. Charles and I will be back on Thursday to preview week 12. Should be another great slate of games. I'm Nate Tice. You can find me at Nate_Tice. That is Matt Harmon. You can find him at Matt_BYB on social media. But what are you working on this week, Matt, outside of Yahoo Fantasy Forecast, which I'll be on tomorrow for the film room?
That's right. No idea what we're going to talk about. The last couple weeks, I had a pretty good plan going into it. This week, no clue. We'll figure that out. But yeah. I'm writing a piece right now about, you know, there's been a little bit of concern in the fantasy space with all this 13 personnel talk with the Rams. You know, Puka Nacua route participation has been going down every single week. I'm going to tell you if you should actually care about that or not.
Is it no? Is
probably is, not. I mean, the answer is sort of. I'm gonna spend like 800 words to say nothing. So, spoiler alert, that's the piece. You don't have to read it if you don't want to. I would love it if people would check out the rookie report. I would love it if people would check out the rookie report on reception perception. Put a lot of time into that, obviously, and there's some interesting takeaways from this year's rookie class. That's for sure.
It's some of my favorite stuff to check out. Every time you update that, I'm always checking out certain guys. Is Kyle Williams a bust? Is Jalen Polk as bad as he looks? Oh no.
Yes.
You know, but also yes is the answer. Yes. But you also get some nice surprises. I like how you categorize it too. Like you're like, oh, this guy's actually surprising us. You know, just I like your categorizations of all that. And also, better get ready for next year's draft class because you got more receivers. I know I always hint at it.
I've heard.
Better get going. That 3 months ago, it was a down receiver class, and I'm like, nope. Just wait, guys.
Never
just
is.
Wait.
And never sure again. Enough,
now I had four guys in my top 30, and I was low. I think some people have like six or seven guys, receivers in their top 30 or 40. So yeah, get to work, Matt. But no, make sure you check out Matt's stuff. It's the best. Reception Perception is a great tool for anybody to use, fantasy or real football wise. Just kind of see what your young guys are doing. Maybe we get some more Jack Besh data so we can actually see what he is. But also make sure you check out that film room or my film room every Wednesday on the Yahoo Sports YouTube channel. Subscribe to us, follow us, rate us wherever you get your podcasts, Apple, Spotify, all that good stuff. Please leave a comment or review. Really appreciate that. I love checking those out. Also watch us on YouTube. You can check out that film room. You can also check out the Yahoo Sports YouTube channel, the Yahoo Fantasy YouTube channel. Check out Matt's great stuff. Thanks to Stone, Austin, Madison behind the scenes for making us look and sound good. Thank you all for joining us today. Thank you for listening. See you guys next time.